staff shakeup for the Trump campaign sends shockwaves through the 2016 election, but will the move pay off? Welcome to Perino and Starwalt. I'll tell you what. I'm Dana Perino, co-host of The Five, along with Fox News digital politics editor Chris Starwalt. Chris, I have a cold, but yes. I'm getting better.
I think it works for you. I think it adds a certain Marlena Dietrich quality. I think it's good.
For the kids out there, they might not know her.
Really? For anybody under 80 doesn't know who that is. You know who that is.
I do know who that is.
Okay.
Yes.
Great German actress, yes.
Yeah, I think I got a cold from air conditioning, like being cooped up in too much air conditioning, and I woke up and it smelled kind of like moldy and musty, and then I was sick.
I think there's no reason for you not to traffic in witch doctory and false science when it comes to your cold. I think it's your cold, so you can blame it on whatever you
want. Okay, fine. Yeah. Good. Well, since we're saying whatever we want, here we are. You know, Steve Hadley, who was the national security advisor under President Bush, used to tell me on Friday nights when we were walking out at the end of a long week, he would say, "You know what it is around here? Long days and short weeks," because time goes by fast in any time, but certainly in a campaign year.
Yeah, that's right. And you turn around and it is Friday and it already happened.
And hello, here we are. So we are about 80 days from the election.
Yep.
And this week, I mean, there was enough news packed into this week to be like 3 weeks worth of news. But maybe we should talk about the staff shakeup first with Donald Trump. So let's see, we got two new people in and one person out.
Right. Kellyanne Conway is the nod to the Republican establishment. She's somebody who has been around, and she is also more in the traditional mold. She's a pollster who is a credible pollster, and she is a nod to the donors and Republicans that the campaign manager is going to be this person. That is offset by the fact that Trump picked Steve Bannon, the head of Breitbart News, to be his CEO, to be the head, the capo tutti capo of his campaign. And that is a move. It's hard in this election cycle to keep perspective on things. So just imagine if 6 months ago or a year ago. No. Imagine after the 20... No, wait, stop. Don't stop imagining things. If after the 2014 election, when Jeb Bush was making a Facebook post to say he was thinking about maybe running for president, if you would have said to the Republican Party, to members of the Republican Party, that the head of Breitbart News will be running the campaign of your nominee going into the end of August, no one would have believed that. That would have been impossible to think of because Breitbart News is essentially against...
Did you just do air quotes?
Yes. No, I did not do air quotes. But now I will. No, Breitbart is was at that time substantially arranged around the idea of attacking the Republican Party, and already was showing signs of the alt-right, which is the it's the white nationalist movement that is popular on the internet. I wouldn't say popular, but has gotten a lot of attention on the internet. Younger, mostly men, who believe that the problem in America are non-white people and the end of non-white culture, and it's Twitter memed and it has flourished in the space of social media. Breitbart did a sympathetic piece about them, and their focus is on nationalism anyway, but also with a strong overlay of cultural conservatism in the sense of they're not ideologically conservative. Their messages aren't ideologically conservative so much as they are about preserving the dominant culture in the United States and those kinds of things. So having a person whose major work in life has been putting forward these ideas to be running the campaign of the Republican nominee tells you the magnitude of the failure of efforts in the Republican Party. And then I'll shut up. But there were two choices for the Republicans coming out of the 2012 election. Rui Teixeira, the Democratic demographer, wrote a book called The Emerging Democratic Majority. And it was when Democrats were really disappointed after the 2004 election, when you all just beat them and they were so shocked because they were just sure that John Forbes Kerry was going to beat that dumb cowboy from Texas. And he didn't. and they couldn't figure it out, and they blamed gay, anti-gay, they blamed guns, they said that the people were hoodwinked and the people were dumb and all that stuff, and they were sad. And this book really hit them where they, it gave them a happy feeling, because they said, don't worry about it, because white people are fading out, and they are, as the majority in the United States, and the emerging majority will be dominated by Hispanics, Blacks, and Asians, or probably Hispanics, Asians, and Blacks. So demography is going to do the work that John Kerry couldn't do, and that by a certain point in the fairly near future, the Republican Party would be rendered obsolete. And Democrats said, yay! And they have made a huge bet on that. That's their bet, that this emerging majority, that right now the electorate this year will be 70 or so percent white. The Republicans would expect to get about two-thirds of that, and then need non-white voters to make up the difference in order to get to a majority. Because unless the Republicans start getting 85% of the white vote, it's not going to be enough. And right now it looks like they'll get 60 or 65% probably of the white vote.
Doesn't it feel terribly un-American to just be looking for voters based on their race and their color?
Well, now wait a minute. I agree, but my job isn't to be
isn't it in general? That would be, it sounds un-American to me.
It does, in the sense that we used to make a big point in America about not intentionally dividing people along those lines, and we found it tasteless and unnecessarily divisive. But that's basically a way to think about what's happening for Republicans now. They had a choice. Do we try to expand and increase the vote share? George W. Bush did 40% with Hispanics. If Republicans could do 40% with Hispanics, if they get 60% of whites and 40% of Hispanics, boom, 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 they got it. The Republicans were going to try to do that, and then they tried the immigration bill. It blew up, and they blew up, and then they nominated a guy who has taken the harshest, most stringent stance against not just illegal immigration, but about immigration as an issue, who is doing worse with minority voters than anybody. The argument is that can be made to work because he can max out the white vote, and that white voters will rally to Donald Trump, and that the reason that he can still win the election is that maybe he can't get 60, maybe he can't get 80% of the white vote, but he could get it up to 75-70%, that he could really turn out white voters, and as a consequence offset the damage done with minorities. And when I say, think about how you would have felt in 2014 if I would have told you that the head of Breitbart would be the head of the Republican nominee's campaign, it's the complete and total repudiation of everything that the leadership of the Republican Party worked for from really 2000, really starting in the 2000 election with George W. Bush and his approach. This is the complete repudiation of all of that. And this is, it's a moment to sort of remember and just keep this as a, in context, it doesn't seem like that huge of a deal. It's another staff shakeup. And in terms of how voters perceive the election, it's nothing. But just remember this as a signal moment about where the Republican Party is now.
Okay, that's depressing.
Oh,
I mean, well. No, seriously. Okay, but let me ask you something. This week,
yeah,
for some reason, my telling the truth about something got a lot of press.
Yeah, I was gonna say, when did it become breaking news for you to tell the truth?
Right. When did it become a liability?
It's not a liability.
Tell the truth. Well, you're right. So. Basically, what happened is you look at a lot of polls. You know polls. You're the digital politics editor, and you actually do it every day in the halftime report. Mm-hmm. And then I read as soon as it comes. And for a long time in the primaries, Donald Trump was doing really well in the polls. And he would talk about the polls all the time, and he was right. He did well in the primaries. And now the polls have not been good for him for about 8 weeks. He doesn't talk about the polls that much anymore, but he has started to suggest that the polls might be rigged or they are wrong, because how could the polls say that he's not winning when he has these amazing rallies that are full of enthusiasm and there's lots of people there, and he has so many followers on social media that the polls must be wrong? And I pointed out that that is a disservice to listeners, viewers, people who would listen to political commentators, that we should not repeat that. And that apparently was news.
Well, I think what is news is, I'm trying to think of a humane way to say this. People want to be involved in politics. And people assume, not people, some people assume, if you start with the premise that the system is rigged and everything is corrupt, then anything is possible, right? So if aliens are at Area 51 and the government is keeping them secret, what else might be true, right? This is the danger with conspiracies and conspiracy theories. If you accept that there is aliens walk among us, for example, and the government's covering it up, what else might be possible? So if you're a person who believes that the system is rigged, and when I say rigged, I mean not just rigged in the sense that, because the system is rigged. It's rigged against people who don't have college degrees. It's rigged against people who can't work in the information age. It's rigged against coal miners. It's rigged against all kind of people because it's not by conspiracy. It's by how things are. But if you believe that it's rigged in the sense that elections get stolen, if you believe that it's rigged in the sense that the media is not just biased but intentionally corrupt and in collusion, then why wouldn't the polls be fake too? Right? Then why wouldn't the polls be fake too? Because if it's all a lie and everything's a ripoff, then why wouldn't the polls be too? And especially if you don't know about polling and you don't know how it works and you don't understand it, you might say that a person who said, well, for example, in the halftime report today, in polls where Donald Trump is head-to-head with Hillary Clinton, he's down 9 points. And in polls that include all four candidates, that include Johnson and Stein, she's up 6.6 points on average. That's huge. Those are large margins. Those would be historically large margins, going back to at least 96, if it was at 6.6. If it was at 9 points, you're back to 1984 to find a landslide bigger. Those are big margins, and the polls are usually accurate. And I have confidence.
You said that the presidential polls have been accurate since 1952. Is that right?
That is correct. The presidential polls have been accurate to a more than tolerable degree since 1952, and the only year of the modern polling era when they blew it was in 1948. You know what they did in 1948 when remember the Dewey Defeats Truman headline?
I love that paper.
They stopped polling 2 weeks before the polling science was in its relative infancy. There was a lot of opt-inning. There were fewer telephones. There was all that stuff. Since then, it's been right on the money. And the polls about Romney, we knew that Mitt Romney was unlikely to win the 2012 presidential election because he was behind in Ohio.
But could I stop you there? Because one of the reasons I made news is because one of the things I was honest about is that I fell for it in 2012 when some Republicans were saying that the polls were skewed and that there were actually more Republicans than Democrats that were being counted, that pollsters were oversampling Democrats, and that therefore on election day Romney was going to surprise everyone and he would actually win. And I believed that going into the election day, and I regret it. And one of the reasons I said what I said this week is that I promised myself on election night 2012 that I would never do it again.
Well, you remember what I was doing on election night in 2012. Do you remember that?
Yeah, you were with Carl.
Well, I wasn't with Carl. I was with Megyn Kelly. When she came back to the decision desk to say, Karl Rove says you're wrong, why are you guys right? And, of course, what we couldn't say at that moment was, because we don't tell till we should tell, was, boy, if Carl doesn't like that one, give it a half an hour. We'll call Florida, and then this thing will really be over. Because Romney lost, and by a stout margin. It wasn't close. He lost in Ohio. He lost in Florida. He lost in Virginia. He lost. And, yes, the polls were tantalizingly close for Republicans on the national level. Ooh, it's just, we're just 1 point down, 2 points down. Well, he ended up losing by four because—and can I say a word about what oversampling means?
Yeah.
Okay.
This is your podcast.
No,
we're just living in it.
No. Oversampling. when somebody says the poll had 6 points more Democrats than Republicans, we've talked about this before. The electorate is more Democratic than Republican. We're not picking Democrats. When we do polls, we don't say, ooh, make sure you get this many Republicans and this many Democrats. They respond however they're going to respond. We just look for the people. The only thing that we're betting on is what will the electorate look like? How many men, how many women, how many African Americans, how many white voters in the right regions of the country and all that stuff. We don't have anything. We don't do any screen for their ideology or affiliation. That's just what the sample comes back with. And let me promise you something now. There will be more Democrats than Republicans who vote on Election Day, or by the time we get to Election Day, because really the election starts next month with early voting in some states, that there will be more Democrats than Republicans, and it'll probably be at a variance of 6 to 8 points. And that's just going to be true because there's more Democrats than Republicans. And to win, Republicans have to win big, or at least solidly with independents. And that's not what's happening right now. And that's why they're losing.
One of the things that I try to explain also is that there is 11 weeks left. It's not a lot of time. As we said, weeks go by fast. But there's three debates, presidential debates, one vice presidential debate. There's existential circumstances. We don't know exactly what's going to happen. You know, you could have a Trump had a good day today down in Louisiana where he was getting... You remember, I don't know if I said it on this podcast, but I said it on The Five, that I felt like one of the things Donald Trump needed to do was to change the scenery.
Yeah.
And get out from behind the podium.
Well, you wanted him to get out of a suit.
No, actually, I said get out of the suit. That's right. I said it on this podcast.
And I chided you.
Right. But he took the tie off today, at least.
Yes.
But he went to Louisiana, and you know what the media had to cover?
What?
The visual of him doing something different, and that's been playing all day long. And I think that's good for him to just not be behind a podium all the time.
I think that we'll see what he does with the rallies. I think that the rallies are a crutch. I think it's great to keep. He's going to hold a rally in Mississippi next week.
And why? Okay, so like, you and I would look at that and say, why would you do that?
Why would you ever do that?
Why would we question that? Explain that.
So if Donald Trump doesn't win Mississippi by 20 points anyway, 15 points anyway, then the election's over anyway. He doesn't need to shore up Mississippi. Mississippi should be Mississippi, Oklahoma, West Virginia, Arkansas should be his strongest states. Alabama should be his strongest states.
So basically you don't need to go there anymore.
Not only do you not need to go there, but holding a rally there is just exposure. Right? Mm-hmm. You're just creating more danger. Every time when you're running for president, every time you talk, there is danger attendant to it. It's necessary that you take the risks, but it's sort of like driving a car. The more you drive, the more likely you are to get into a crash. That's just the truth, because it's all about exposure time. Donald Trump needs to put his car in the garage, right? He needs to take days off the trail. He needs to not be out there as much because what he needs now, my advice, if I were a Republican, I would say, and if I were a strategist, I would say to Donald Trump, let the sediment filter out of this solution for a minute. Calm down. Go home. Get briefings. He did two smart things. One, he held the brief. He looked like a serious person sitting at a table with advisors. Getting a briefing, he allowed shots of that. That's a good image to have out there. Then he looked like the president going down to Louisiana, talking to people, acting presidential. Get off into Trump Force One, go down, talk to the people. You go have a rally and you fire them up down in Mississippi. If those people just better go vote for you. Successful candidates are what I call wink candidates. Obama was a great wink candidate. No liberal wondered whether Obama was their guy, right? His name was Barack Hussein Obama. He was the first black major party nominee. He was from the south side of Chicago. He was born to biracial parents in Hawaii and had lived in Indonesia. And the way that he entered the national stage was by calling the Iraq War a dumb war. If you didn't know, as an American liberal, that this was a guy who was on your team, there was nothing else to say. So what he was able to do, which is the same thing Reagan was able to do to conservatives in the 1980 election, was say, it's cool. I got this. You all chill. And then they go, and then your people go chill. And they go vote for you because they're really excited because you're going to be their guy. And then you can make your outreach to the rest of the, because that's the latitude that you get. Trump needs to reach out to different kinds of working class white voters and get out of states like Mississippi and focus on people in places like Minnesota, in Iowa. When you look at the numbers in Iowa particularly, he's lost some ground in Iowa, but Iowa is a state that has a huge percentage, 80% of adult whites in Iowa don't have college degrees. That's one of the highest levels in the country. That's why Nevada stays close. That's why Iowa stays close. For working class white voters, Donald Trump is still very much part of the discussion. He's just doing too poorly with college educated white voters to make it happen right now.
So in a speech last night that was getting some attention because it was different in tone, I'm going to get your take on it before I give you mine, where he expressed regret for saying things that might have hurt people's feelings. You buying it?
So that was the I'm sorry you took it that way, basically.
Yeah. I hate it when my husband says that.
I'm sorry you were offended by me telling you the truth,
right.
Basically.
Right.
And that you are so emotional. I believe that he regrets some of it because it's cost him a lot.
Mm-hmm.
The invective, the nastiness, the insults.
See, because I thought that was aimed towards women.
Yeah.
Right, so Kellyanne Conway goes into him and says, "You're doing so poorly with women, and we got to improve those numbers at least stop the slide. So white educated women or college educated women, we want them to at least give you a second look, maybe. And by expressing regret for hurting other people's feelings, you might be able to do that.
But it's not enough." Now, I think that the trip to Louisiana is good, and I think that that's good in terms of getting your campaign back, getting it on track. Now, I wouldn't say back on track because it's never been on track. So getting it back on track, getting it on track is you show, as I said on television today, as they would say in Tridelphia, West Virginia, they don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And Donald Trump's playing the bully, the mean guy, but I'll be your mean guy. I'll be your bully. I'll push around mm-hmm. other people on your behalf mm-hmm. is appealing to some people mm-hmm. who want essentially this. Hillary Clinton says you live in Gotham City. It's a good place to live, but sometimes aliens from Krypton come and smash up the streets, or bad people show up in a good place and do bad things, and you need a champion in Superman to come and push and take care of these bad people and these dangers. But you live in a good place. Donald Trump says you live in Gotham City. It's bad. Crime is everywhere, threats are everywhere, dangers are everywhere, and you need the Dark Knight, right? You need Batman. You need a guy who's a little messed up, right? A little off, but he can handle it because that's the world you live in. And those two, there was a Pew Research Center poll out just today that talked about the views of the world, and do you think that America is better today than it was 50 years ago is the question. And among Clinton and Trump supporters, the divide was enormous. Trump supporters very clearly saw the America as a worse place today than it was 50 years ago, where Clinton supporters say that it's much better. Now, of course, part of that does have to do with race and ethnicity, because if you were, let's say, an African-American woman, you might not think mm-hmm. that things were a lot better 50 years ago. If you're a white male, you might say, Don Draper got to drink all day and have sex with a secretary and then pass out on the couch and nobody yelled at him. Maybe that'd be all right.
But what
know.
About the fact that 70% of people, I think it's 70% of people today, think that the country's on the wrong track. Does that worry Hillary Clinton?
I want somebody to tell me who in the heck are the 30% of people that think it's on the right track. Please introduce me to these 30. Have you seen? If you thought that America was on the right track right now, you would have to. You would have to not be paying attention, essentially. Everybody agrees. There's broad consensus. Now, here's the problem with right track, wrong track polls. Nobody says why, right? You might say the country's on the wrong track because you're terrified of Donald Trump. And you think that the cultural norms as we know them that tie the country together and keep the republic safe and afloat are unraveling. You might think of that. You might think that's why it's on the wrong track, or you might think it's on the wrong track because you believe that Obama is a crypto-socialist creep who is intentionally trying to destroy the United States because he hates America. You might think it's on the wrong track. There are a lot of reasons you might think it's on the wrong track. We don't know why, except for every politician will tell you that it's because of the other guy.
Is Hillary Clinton worried about anything right now?
Yeah.
What?
She should. I think what she's worried about, I don't know what she is worried about, but what she should be worried about is two things.
Okay.
That Democrats become listless, that they're ahead, they know they're ahead, they don't. The danger, and you and I talked about it in the early going, Trump clinched this nomination in May faster than anybody really expected, I think, including Trump himself. I think he was expecting to fight at the conventions and all this stuff. So he did it faster and more thoroughly than a lot of people expected. Now, Democrats weren't taking him seriously. Oh, this guy. And Hillary Clinton said, no, you better take it seriously. So one danger she has is they say, we're killing him. We're up 9 points. It's whatever. Forget about it. And that they become listless. That's one thing that she should be worried about. The other thing that she should be worried about is if she were to win, that she would be in a terrible situation to have an effective presidency. I don't know whether she's worried about that, but boy, you want to talk about make LBJ jealous or make LBJ have sympathy for you. You could very easily see Hillary Clinton winning a 1964-sized victory over the Republican candidate and being out 4 years later.
Yeah. Well, that's not much comfort for people that want the Republicans to win.
Well, sure, but, you know, presidential elections have a 50% loss rate. I don't know whether you knew that.
Oh, God. I can do that math. Hillary Clinton has spent a ton of money on ads. She's got this huge staff. She's probably overstaffed. You know, she's raised a ton of money. They spend a lot of money. That's what Clintons have done. And and Trump really hasn't spent that much money, not just on ads, but on field operations. I think that is starting to change a little bit after Labor Day.
Starting now, right.
Can he make that up?
No, but he can have enough. Look, Hillary Clinton has owned the Olympics. Only Ryan Lochte has had more Olympic coverage than Hillary Clinton in her ads. That they had in the heaviest rotation was of little children watching Donald Trump on television saying awful things.
Mm-hmm.
And then they did one where David Letterman shames Donald Trump on his show about having his clothes made overseas. And they ran him in really heavy rotation during the Olympics. Whatever you watched on the Olympics, you were likely
to
see
one
of those
ads.
Like speed walking, even if a guy does not have intestinal distress during the speed walk. So the danger for Trump is, even if you start to catch up with money, that Mitt Romney got defined in Ohio. You and I talked about this before. When Romney got his bounce after the first debate at the beginning of October, and people said, hey, who is this Willard M. Romney? He's not a vampire. That he beat expectations. What happened was the polls in Ohio didn't move. And they just kept not moving, and they kept not moving. Even as he starts to improve in Wisconsin and Michigan, in states that have similar demographic composition, that are in the same region with similar economic footprints, why isn't this happening? Why isn't he doing better in Ohio? And the answer was Team Obama had gone to Ohio in the spring and early summer and just owned it. They had just put it, you know, $1 million a month when TV advertising was cheap with really brutal ads to define Mitt Romney. And they kept Ohio covered throughout. Hillary Clinton is doing that on a national level with Trump and sort of defining it. He's defined himself, but she's reinforcing that definition. His ad, though, is a terrifying apocalyptic vision of the future that looks like something out of The Running Man, grainy, black and white, stark despair. So he's got a lot of despair to sell. He has to really sell. If you remember in 2004, and I bet it made you so mad, the Democrats were quietly rooting for things to get worse in Iraq faster, right? They wanted it to get worse faster so that Kerry could beat Bush, and they could excuse themselves by saying, and then we'll pull out of the war, and then no one else will die. But let's get it, let's have it get worse faster so that Americans will know the truth, and then we'll defeat George W. Bush. You remember that?
Yes.
So for Trump, he's in a sort of a similar situation. That Pew poll has Barack Obama at his highest approval rating since 2009, 53% approval. High. That's very high for the last year of a president's term. That's higher than Reagan by a considerable amount. We know it's higher than the last president's. Those are good numbers. People feel, by and large, that their personal finances and that they're optimistic about themselves personally and what's going on for them. A lot of them are. Donald Trump needs to convince 70 million people, 70 million voters around the country that we're at the edge, baby. Like he said in his speech about when he was in North Carolina, he said, you have nothing to lose. He said, yeah, basically it was an acknowledgement. I'm different from anybody else who's ever run for president, different from anybody else who has ever been president.
That's the line I told him to use on Tuesday.
You have nothing to lose.
I think he might watch The Five.
He'd be crazy not to.
He probably hates me, though.
Well, maybe y'all will hang.
Oh, well, honestly.
Maybe y'all will hang.
You know, the hours go by fast. People are loving the podcast. You know, one of the things that we talked about last time is we're looking for music.
Yeah.
And it's become like an ordeal.
Yeah, but you know what? I'm used to the man keeping me down, and now the man's keeping me down again because the law says that there's music we can't use.
I don't understand why we can't use Hawkins from West Virginia.
My suggestion of Hawkshaw Hawkins' "Sunny Side of the Mountain," which is a beautiful, beautiful song, and you and I are both people who live on the sunny side of the mountain. But we can't have that. That's fine. But we're gonna find music. I have faith.
Do you think that we should call his family and ask him if we could use it?
I mean, I'm from West Virginia, but I do not know the Hawkinses. He was from Huntington. You know, he died in the plane with the Big Bopper.
No, I did not know that.
Or no, with Patsy Cline.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Do you know when I was a country music DJ?
What?
You didn't know that? I was. In college, I was a country music DJ. Worked 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. for KCCY-FM 96.9.
Wow.
And I worked 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. for minimum wage. It was $3.35 an hour.
But you were in showbiz.
And there was a I wanted to be in TV. And in those days, if you wanted to be in TV, you had to start in radio. And I had a playlist that I had to follow. There was not much autonomy. A monkey could have done it. But every night, every morning on Saturdays at like 3 a.m. on my playlist was, I had to go get the cassette tape out, or that little, whatever they call that, cartridge,
right.
And get Patsy Cline. And guess what the number of that cartridge was?
I don't know.
666. And I had to do it every Saturday morning.
Yikes.
I think they did it just to make me scared, sitting in the dark
by
myself.
Well, what was the song? What was the song?
Crazy.
Oh, okay. It's a beautiful song. You know who wrote that song?
No.
Willie Nelson.
Hawkshaw Hawkins.
No, not Hawkshaw Hawkins. Willie Nelson wrote that song.
Really?
Yep. And if you've ever heard him perform it, and if you do Willie and Family Live, if you get that on Willie and Family Live, and he does it with a dobro, and it is just beautiful. It will just break your heart.
Are you kidding?
I am not kidding. It will break
your
heart.
Are we allowed to play that on this podcast?
No.
Pretty much you're not allowed to do anything.
Anything.
And actually, I thought podcasts were where you could do whatever you wanted. I didn't think there was the law.
Right. The man, and the next thing they say, I'm going to have to start wearing pants to do these. And it's just not fair. It's just not right.
Okay, are you ready for trivia?
Ready.
Two questions. First one's so easy, I'm kind of embarrassed to even read it out loud to you.
Oh, boy.
Since 1992, California has been a reliable blue state.
Word.
But prior to Bill Clinton's 13-point victory, Republicans won 9 out of the state's 10 previous presidential contests. Which one did they lose?
Had to be 64.
Yeah. See, it's so easy. Jason.
Well, I need an easy one because the next one's going to be, what size was Lou Hoover's girdle?
Who is Lou Hoover?
Oh, my gosh. That was the wife of Herbert Hoover.
Oh. Really?
Yes. And I don't know that she wore a girdle.
Oh, okay. Well, okay. I am going to...
Ass.
They call me Negative Nelly, but they could call me Naive Nancy,
uh-huh,
too.
That's what I count on.
Negative Nancy, Negative Nelly, whatever. You ready for the second one?
Ready.
Okay. The saying, as Ohio, so goes the nation, or as Ohio goes, so goes the nation,
right,
refers to the Buckeye State great track record in picking presidents. In fact, since 1900, Ohio has only gotten two presidential contests wrong.
Right.
Which ones?
1960. And when? Oh, since 1900, gotten it wrong twice. 1960, I know, is one. I'm going to also say that, because Nixon really won. I'm going to say, wouldn't have been 20. Could it have been 36?
44. Roosevelt.
What? Thomas E. Dewey won Ohio in 44?
That's what Jason Bonewald's saying.
That is astonishing.
Isn't that great?
Wow. Huh.
Who knew?
Nobody ever bothers to look up anything in the 1944 election because it was basically the Republicans are like, whatever.
Yeah, whatever. What are you and Arthur and Mary and Newman up to this weekend?
You know what? I tell you one thing I'm going to be doing. I'm going to be on Fox and Friends because I love working all the time. That's something I'm going to do.
Saturday or Sunday?
Saturday. It's going to be so great. I'll plug the podcast.
Okay, that's good. That'll be great. Mm-hmm. I'm going to New Jersey.
Who wouldn't?
I mean, Jersey
Hanging out
Shore.
With Chris Christie? Oh, the Shore.
The Shore.
Nice.
Hanging out with Chris Christie. What are you talking about?
Down at Harrah's in Atlantic City. It's going to be awesome.
All right. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast, and you can spread the word and help others find us, too, by leaving a rating and a review. Please do that. This has been Perino and Starwalt. I'll tell you what, from Fox News Radio.